Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live from the palatial 200-square-foot studio located in the basement of Dave's house, here's Heath Elsenson, Tomas Mauricio, and your host, David Romero.
Welcome in, another week, a holiday edition, the BS and Beer podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints talk. With me to, well, no, with me to my, well, no either. Look, it's just me riding solo for the holidays. I'm out on away on vacation. We're kind of doing this remotely. But if you miss Wesley, Tomas, Heath, they will be joining us over the phone line. So what we're going to do is a little bit something different during the holidays here, but we're still going to do 1 hour of outstanding New Orleans Saints football talk. The Saints go into Nashville and beat the Titans 38-28 in what was a very up and down game initially. But then as the Saints settled in, as the penalties kind of went away, all of a sudden the Saints started turning it up and we saw a little bit of what we expect out of the New Orleans Saints going up against what is a good but maybe more average team in the Titans. In the second half, we saw what we've been seeing for, I don't know, several weeks here, maybe right before, well, maybe even since Drew Brees came back and is an explosive offense that we really haven't seen since the beginning of 2018. The Saints got down 14-0 after playing a pretty sloppy first quarter, then moved on to outscore the Titans 10-0 in the second quarter, bringing the game to 14-10 at halftime. But then after halftime, the Saints got the ball on the second half kickoff and went on to they scored 21 points in the third quarter, really opening the game up. Now, because they got behind early, it allowed the Titans to, stay in the game, put the Titans in a position where they were always close. But quite frankly, if you really look at the game in general, the Saints actually played a pretty good game, except outside the first quarter. The Titans, it was not until about 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter before they ran a play in the red zone. Now, you'd have to say something about the Saints giving up all these big plays, which they did pretty consistently. But then again, the injury bug is something that we're really going to have to pay attention to, because not only did the Saints lose some very good players and starters, you know, in Davenport and Rankin, we still haven't seen Alonzo back on the field, which it looks like he's getting close. But then the injury bug hit us in a defensive backfield. We haven't had Von Bell. We lost Eli Apple in this game. But because of some injuries, we got to see players that we don't usually see a lot. And some guys are stepping up. There's a guy running around there with number 22 on, and this isn't new. Rookie Chauncey Gardner-Johnson has been making plays ever since he started getting playing time. And with the absence of Von Bell, who was also playing outstanding, we're starting to see this guy. He makes plays on the line of scrimmage. He played free safety after Marcus Williams went out injured, and maybe the biggest play of the game, had a tackle, which was very controversial, but made a tackle, forced a fumble, recovered the fumble, and advanced it. The Saints have found themselves a gem, and a guy that I think this is something that we're going to have to go into much more detail about. He, with all the contracts coming up, we had a unbelievable draft class a few years back, and we found not just starters, but outstanding starters, and you can only pay so many guys. Somebody's going to have to walk, and it looks like this guy is in a position to be able to let one of those guys walk. Will it be Von Bell, which was my initial thought, or after he played some free safety with a little more experience, could he end up being a starter for Marcus Williams if the Saints decide to let one of them go? Because the same thing happened with Vaccaro, if you remember, who actually plays for the Titans now. Do you make the decision to keep him, or do you say, hey, we can't pay him the big money because we have other guys we need to pay? So this is where it really shows the importance. And we've actually alluded to this when we start talking about, should we give up the whole draft for a guy like Burrows? And it's a hypothetical. But this is the kind of stuff where if you give up your draft picks, you can't bring in a young guy and replace a guy that you have to pay who may not be a guy who you want to pay. Now, Gardner Johnson is a guy that the Saints are going to have to obviously find playing time for, find a starting position. And quite frankly, I would expect that when it's time for contracts to be renewed, either Bell or Williams will not come back. Now, you would think that if he continues to play well at free safety, he's a much better tackler. I'm not sure if he has the coverage skills of Williams, but based on his limited playing, I would say that it looks like he does. Or at least, you know, does it offset his ability to tackle? Does it offset his coverage ability? So one way or another, do we keep Bell? Depending on how much money Bell's going to require. The point is we have options now. And one way or another, this guy has to get on the field because he makes plays constantly. Another guy who made a lot of plays that you just wouldn't expect was P-Rob. Patrick Robinson, who we signed a couple of years ago from Philadelphia, was all over the field. Pass breakups, the big play at the end of the game to break up a deep ball, which pretty much just ended the game for the Saints. He also had some plays at the line of scrimmage where he made tackles on running backs, stuck his head in there in the running game. You know, guys get injured. In this case, Eli Apple goes down, and Patrick Robinson steps in. He's making plays. So we always say next man up. Not every position has enough depth for next man up, but the Saints look like they're in a position where they have the defensive backfield to be able to at least overcome the loss if Eli Apple is injured for any amount of time. But in addition to that, we know last week we signed a player in Jenkins who's supposed to be a significantly better player. Jenkins did not have a great game. Matter of fact, I would say he had a poor game. But again, a guy who has a week, he's hesitating. He's still trying to figure out where he's supposed to be on which play call. So there's a little indecision. So I would expect that you'll see after a week of practice that he'll get better and better. But the way P-Rob plays gives me confidence that the Saints aren't lost at that cornerback position if Eli Apple misses any time. One of the things that was discouraging about the game is how many times the Saints gave up just huge plays. Because I mentioned that the Titans didn't run a play in the red zone, but they still had 21 points at that time. All their plays were big plays. And that's something that obviously the Saints, it happened in a 49er game. If they're going to play good teams, they have to eliminate these big plays and these easy scores. And they gave up quite a few of them. And it's just important in any defense. You just cannot give big plays and easy scores like that. So I think that's something the Saints will have to tighten up on. But all in all, once the second half started, it was a different ball game. The Saints looked like the playoff team to the Titans, which are, you know, if they do make the playoffs, it won't be because they excelled on the field. It'll just be because of weak competition, similar to what we saw on Sunday with the Cowboys and the Eagles. One of these two teams going to back their way into the playoffs. The Cowboys, which look to have more talent, or is it just because the media constantly builds them up to be this great team that really isn't as good as they make them out to be? One way or another, they end up losing to the Eagles. And now the Eagles have control of that division if they can win next week against the Redskins. But this is a time of year where, while it is about the Saints, obviously, it's so exciting because there's all kinds of things going on in the other games that we'll have to talk about. The things that allow the Saints could end up with the third seed. The Saints could end up with the second seed. The Saints could end up with the first seed. Unfortunately, the game that was the most important was the Monday night game, the Packers at the Vikings, where the Vikings absolutely laid an egg and put the Saints in a position where it'd be an uphill battle from this point forward to get a first round bye. Now, we still have hope if somehow a banged up Seattle team can find a way to beat San Francisco in Seattle, which is usually a tough place to play. Unfortunately, left tackle's out. They just signed Marshawn Lynch. Their defensive tackle's out. Josh Gordon out. It's just going to be an uphill battle. We could have also used some help from the Rams to beat the 49ers on Saturday night. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. It's going to make it an uphill battle. But let me reassure you guys, you win 13 games. I don't care what seed you are. You have a shot. Just as good a shot as anybody else. So we'll see what happens. 97.7 Sports Talk Radio. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with some more Saints talk. I'll never be your biggest bird.
BS and Beer Podcast, the worldwide leader in absolutely nothing.
Welcome back, 97.7 Sports Talk Radio, the BS and Beer Podcast crew talking wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints talk. Wesley, Heath, and Tomas will be joining us in a little while, but before we get to those guys, let's talk about some of the encouraging things going into the playoffs. We have 1 week of the regular season left, and going into the playoffs, right off the bat, you have to be encouraged by Alvin Kamara's play. This is the first time he's scored, and he had 2 touchdowns in the game. First time he scored since week 3. Hard to believe, but you know, he had a couple of weeks where he didn't play because he was out injured. And he just hasn't been the same since he came back from the injury. And I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but in this game was the first time early. I was a little discouraged because there was a particular play where he caught a ball and there wasn't a defender around him for maybe 7 yards, but he caught his ball to the back with his back to the defense. And he just kind of stepped out of bounds where he had plenty of room to run, and it was kind of felt like here we go again. But after that, he had a long 40-yard touchdown run. And while that's obviously a positive, there was another play, and this is the Alvin Kamara that we've been missing. It was just a simple toss out into the flats. He faced up to the linebacker, then exploded and got about 8 yards on the play where he had a defender right in front of him, and if you have him in open field, the first guy will not catch him. And that's the element that we miss. And while it may not seem important or seem like a big play, it wasn't a 40-yard gain. It wasn't a touchdown, but it was that explosion. That's the play that puts you in 2nd and 2 as opposed to 2nd and 8. So we saw some explosions, even a few runs where he just looked more aggressive. And I'm not sure if it's just the confidence thing or if it's return to health. Either way, we're going to need Alvin Kamara and his explosiveness if we're going to be a factor in the playoffs. We just absolutely need the playmaking ability. We can go on to Jared Cook, who shows that he has now found his comfort level with Drew Brees, or maybe it's the opposite, that Drew Brees has found his comfort level with Cook. And he is a huge target in the mold of Jimmy Graham or Colston or those guys that Brees feels comfortable throwing the ball in the middle of the field, and Cook has the height and the strength and the athleticism to go up and make a play. Now, let's move on to Thomas. And the thing about Michael Thomas is this is an every week occurrence. You don't break this record, which was the individual single season reception record. You don't break that record without being consistent throughout the entire season. He has been unstoppable. And I don't know if it's irony, but he got a contract this offseason and made him one of the highest players, paid receivers in the league, if not the highest. And he has not only has he not dropped off, he's improved his play. It's always a concern when you pay a player that they're just not quite as hungry, they don't quite put out as hard as they did when they were hungry, and they wanted to get paid. And this guy has taken the money that the Saints have paid him and showed that it wasn't enough. So, I mean, Michael Thomas is a bargain basement value at, 5 years, $96 million, $20 million average a year, and about $60 million in guarantees. That's a bargain basement Walmart bin while you're checking out. There's a little bin right there. You can get the old DVDs or some gum or some candy. That's basically what, you know, Michael Thomas is providing for his $100 million. We got him at an outstanding value, and I was even one who was reluctant to pay any NFL player that money because, it just sometimes seems like it doesn't work out. He has earned every penny of it and been the value for the Saints in the conversation, and Lamar Jackson's going to get it, but he is in the conversation for NFL MVP. He has been literally unstoppable. Can't guard Mike. Perfect social media name. He has, on the season, 145 receptions on 176 targets, 1,688 yards, 11.6 average, 9 touchdowns with a long of 49. Now, he also has another game to play against the Carolina Panthers, who, think about this, folks. Last week, we beat the brakes off the Colts. the Colts turn around and beat the brakes off the Panthers, and we're playing the Panthers this weekend. Now, I'm not going to sleep on them because we will need to win to maintain the highest seeding possible by beating the Panthers. But based on the way the Panthers, it looks like they pretty much checked out, and you just hope that they continue, you know, have the U-Hauls loaded, ready to go home for the offseason and not really care too much about this game, because not only would I like to see the Saints win this game, obviously, but I would like to see them get out of the game injury-free. So if Carolina could just roll over for us, please, if you don't mind, just roll over and let us go out there and just go through the motions. Nobody gets hurt. You know, nobody takes too much of a pounding. And then we head into the playoffs as healthy as possible with hopefully some of these guys who've been injured coming back, as opposed to getting more injuries piled on, because it just, with the loss of Eli Apple, it's a little uncomfortable. You never want to lose a starter. You never want to, you know, listen, even if he would happen to get supplanted by Jenkins, you still want the best depth you have possible. So for him to be injured and be out is a negative no matter how you look at it. So let's hope to stay as healthy as possible, moving on into the playoffs, and so that we could be the best team we can be. Now, we got a little bit of help on Sunday. Talk about that real quick. The game that we really needed was we really needed the Rams to beat the 49ers. It was a great game. Some plays at the end, it was two third and 16s in a row that the Rams converted. One of them was a third and 16 that they ended up getting a huge shot down the field on a busted coverage, and it closed the game out. The 49ers were right for the pick, and the Rams could have helped the Saints out tremendously, failed to do so. The other game was Seattle actually losing to Arizona, and that helps it. But here's the problem. We need Seattle to beat the 49ers in week 17. The problem is that now Seattle lost their running back. They lost their left tackle. Last week, they lost Josh Gordon to another substance abuse issue. And they lost a very good, in Al Woods, they lost a defensive tackle that's a good run stopper, a good defensive lineman, brings sturdiness to their defensive line. And you need those things. You need your front seven and your offensive line to be as in good a shape as possible to play the 49ers, who that's where their strengths lie. It's going to be an uphill battle. The game is in Seattle, which should help a lot. But having said that, it's hard to be confident in Seattle when they're as banged up as they are. And quite frankly, I don't think they're that good of a team. I think that they're a solid team, maybe even on the line with the Titans, maybe a little bit more explosive than the Titans, but Seattle isn't a great team. They have a great quarterback in Russell Wilson, but they're very beatable. And so the 49ers, I think, especially in light of all the injuries with Seattle, would have to come in and make some mistakes, and Seattle would have to play their best game. So I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for that to happen. All right, so now let's bring Wesley in. And Wesley, give me your general ideas of the game against the Titans. It started off as a struggle, man, and you know, the Titans, I think they're a solid team, but their record is what they are. You know, about a 500 team.
Yeah, I mean, they've been close to 500. They did have some problems with Marcus Mariota earlier in the year. I mean, I believe since switching quarterbacks, you know, they've beaten the Chiefs. They've played some other borderline playoff quality teams, and they've done really well with Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback, and they've had a stout defense for the entire season.
The defense, and they showed it in the game where, you know, early on they gave the Saints a lot of trouble. They played the run well, and that's what you expect from that type of team. They've been that for the last several years, and I do believe since Tannehill, which is, you know, kind of ironic because when he came from Miami, I think that Miami gave up on him. But there's been several players that gone from Miami, obviously a team that's all but given away all of their draft picks. Players for draft picks. They, you know, there are a lot of guys who kind of maybe mentally checked out. So Tannehill comes to the Titans and becomes the quarterback that, you know, maybe a lot of people thought he would be when he came out of the draft.
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins gave up on everybody this year. And honestly, I mean, it may be a better endorsement of the quality of play of Ryan Tannehill to say that the Dolphins gave up on him. That might mean he's got some talent.
Right, absolutely. There are some guys that I thought that were played very well. Some surprises. Eli Apple goes out, and to me, after rewatching the game, the biggest surprise that I had was the play of Patrick Robinson. he not only played tough, and it's not just the plays you saw. There was one play where he came off very similar to Gardner Johnson, how he's kind of made a name for himself on some of those off-the-edge blitzes or what have you. But there was one play where he came in hard coming from the slot and made a tackle in the backfield on a running play, and I was just really impressed with his toughness. And then, of course, the big play where he closes the game out. Who are the guys that you thought really impacted the game that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, so, I mean, what you just said, too, about Patrick Robinson, there was a play where he hit, like, right in the middle of the line and all the offensive linemen, he hit a running back hard, and I was like, oh, man, what linebacker was that? And I was like, saw the play coming together, I'm like, that was Patrick Robinson getting in there getting physical.
We might be talking about the same play.
Man, I originally thought it was Chauncey Gardner-Johnson for a second. I mean, two things that stick out to me. One, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, we're just talking about him. This kid's a rookie playing in what we assume is a complicated secondary, because we have seen some people with some talent in the past few years come in and struggle with the communication piece in the secondary for the Saints. There's a lot of communication and the way we go back and forth between our safeties and who takes who and where the linebackers come off and where we play a lot of zone and man and some good mixtures. We've seen some intelligent, maybe talented guys come in here and struggle for a while to understand how to play defense. This guy's played three different positions this year on defense and has made plays at all three of them, and not only just like on the pass plays and not only on the running plays. This guy's – he's covered fast receivers, big receivers, running backs, blitzed the quarterback. He's been fun to watch. And, of course, you know what? We'll say that he's made some rookie mistakes, but he's making mistakes that our veterans are making too.
Right, right.
I don't even know if we'd call them rookie mistakes. He's making the same mistakes that all our guys are making, and not anymore, but he's making big plays, and that little – he's got a real healthy chip on his shoulder, but what I saw that I liked was he hurt a guy. He knocked the receiver unconscious.
Yeah.
But as soon as the play was over and the return was over, that chippiness went down. Like, he controlled it and was a professional, wanted to make sure the guy was okay. He told the other guys, hey, stop celebrating. Let's see if this guy's okay. That's like just the right amount of chippiness.
Right, right.
Like,
I agree.
Everybody's healthy and standing up face-to-face. Come get me. But hey, okay, like, I got the big play, I got the return. Let's see if this guy's, you know, still alive.
Well, let's talk a little bit about — I think you brought this up because I think I questioned and you sent me a text during the game. I said, you know, we have to see him play some free safety. I don't know how much free safety he played in college, and I don't know if he could actually play it, because your point was — and I've made the point, the general overall point — is that we can't keep all these guys. We cannot keep the you know, Marshawn Lattimore, we can't re-sign Ramchek, we can't re-sign Onyemata, Rankins, all these players, so we have to make choices. And it makes your choices easier when you have guys coming up the pipeline that are young rookies who can replace. Now, my initial thought was, Bell is having a good year, he could replace Bell. But quite frankly, you don't want to lose your good players too. But if the kid can play free safety the way he's played — now, I want to say this before I get any comments — let's keep in mind, nobody really knew he's going to be there, so they didn't scheme against him. They didn't attack him. But if he can play free safety, the inadequacies we've seen with Williams, maybe they get replaced by Chauncey Gardner, Johnson, and this secondary could be a lethal secondary if what we're seeing now goes forward.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I agree with you. I believed in him being able to play safety based on just watching his intelligence and his aggressiveness. Having said that, his last year in college, he did not play safety. He was listed as a safety because all the measurables said he was a safety. He played nickel cornerback, guarding tight ends and big receivers his entire last year in college. Now, before that, he had played some safety. That last year, they just had him as the athletic guy that go do it. But it wasn't at safety. So it's kind of like his measurable said he was a good safety and some of his talents, but we didn't watch him do it for a long time. I agree. Him and Von Bell, man, they kind of — you would say before this week, you'd have been like, oh, they play the same position, how can we get them both on the field?
Right.
I'm really intrigued to see both of those guys, because both of them look like they're really good in pass coverage. They're really aggressive. They don't miss tackles like some people in our secondary. Not naming any names, Marcus Williams. But man, I tell you what, it really helps out when you can have guys deep that can get all the way up to the line and help your linebackers out.
Well, and that's what we've seen with Williams, is that he has range, and that's supposed to be a strength, that he's a ball hawk, but he's a poor tackler. It's just a matter of fact. Cool. And so if we see the range Garner brings, I'm sorry, Johnson, so many damn names, I can't remember one guy. If he can bring that range, then when contract time comes, you might see that, because they have to get him on the field. Look, he's proven he's a playmaker. Look, also, the Titans are a good team. The Saints beat them on grass in the last 3 years, 10-3. The Saints used to not be a team that could play on the road. They are now.
Yeah, I think that there's a reputation that people still follow us about what we can't do on the road or on grass. Remember, like you said, a fringe playoff team. They beat the Chiefs a few weeks ago outside in the bad weather where we shouldn't be able to throw the ball, and rowdy crowd that we're down 14-0, and you think that everything's stacked against us. We're committing every penalty you can on offense and defense, but we turn around and beat a playoff team in their house in bad weather convincingly by 10 points.
97.7 Sports Talk Radio. When we come back, we're going to have more Saints talk. Don't go anywhere.
Well, it's your old buddy Chef Pierre Gautreaux. Y'all gather around the radio and we're going to listen to some BS and Beer podcast. Ooh, ça c'est bon. That's a good show, yeah.
Sugar-free, gluten-free, fat-free, talent-free, and free-free, the BS and Beer podcast.
Welcome back, 97.7 Sports Talk Radio. Let me bring in Tomas. Tomas, we were talking during the game, and I was upset during the game. But then after watching the game the second time, the offensive line actually played better than I gave him credit for, especially when you consider both of our starting guards were out of the game.
Yeah. I also watched the game again, and I would say the same thing. As we were talking during the game, and I said to you, you know, when you go from a fellow who is like an 8.5,
right,
you know, going up towards a 9, you replace him with a 3.5, that's a huge drop-off. You know, you're not talking about a fellow who was a 9, and now you have an 8, you know. So, I mean, I appreciate Clapp for what he does, but Clapp's neither Pete, and I know people rag on Pete, but man, let me tell you what, you can tell a difference when Pete's not in there. Right. So, you know, losing Pete and then losing Warford. And it's not just the drop of their own individual talent. It's also a drop of the cohesiveness of the offensive line. Because on several plays, you saw that you know, they knew that was a problem for us. And so they shoot two people up the middle so that McCoy would pick one guy first. And then as he's rotating to get the other guy, well, neither Clapp nor Easton is rolling over to pick up the guy he let go. So that's why you got the pressure on Drew, and why you got the sacks on Drew, because it just wasn't that, you know, uniformity of play that one guy knows what the other guy's going to do and can pick up the slack as they roll around picking up one guy or another guy. So, you know, but overall, the offensive line, considering they're beat up, they did not play bad at all. I mean, I would take that same kind of play every game if that's what we have left to go with, you know?
Yeah, and the thing is, once we get these starters back, because we still don't know exactly the severity of the injury to Warford.
Right,
but
right,
I think
right.
It's going to be a big deal to get him back because of the fact that the athleticism he brings, and the same thing with Pete. Even if you don't notice, let's say, necessarily penetration, there are certain plays, and we had a couple of those during the game, where we threw a screen-type play where the offensive line
went
out.
And all
you
those.
Could tell they couldn't get out there in time.
Right, so, right. They can't pull like guards,
Right. That's where you miss the athleticism. And a guy like Pete, he's a great run blocker. He has his struggles in the pass game. But he's athletic, and that's what's kind of head-scratching about how he fails in the passing game. But he's a road grader, and he's athletic enough to get out on those screens. And that's why I think you haven't seen a whole bunch of those recently. Now, another guy.
I hope they don't keep throwing us, because those plays out to Kamara, they're just dead. Every time they throw that play out there, they don't want to run the wheel route, which I don't understand. They just want to do that little in the flat kind of dump screen kind of thing that just doesn't work, you know? So, you know, and like I said to you, the thing is, yes, they all have their problems, but the thing to me is that Pete knows when McCoy's in trouble, he knows how to roll over and pick up that guy. Same thing with Warford, you know? Yeah. Now, for me, I'm hopeful. I know it's going to sound kind of strange, but to me, I'm hopeful that they just let Warford and Pete sit out one more game. I'm good with that. Let's let these kids keep playing, you know, against Carolina, because I really think I'd rather have them closer to 100% than just 60 or 70%.
I agree with you, and I think with Carolina that you have a situation where you could probably get away with it with Carolina.
Yes.
I would imagine that based on their season and who's playing quarterback and the injuries, that they probably have the U-Hauls ready to go, warmed up outside the stadium. So, and I'm hoping that, because godly, you want to come out of that game as injury-free as possible. Now, a lot of people, a lot of accolades on the internet, Twitter. Kamara had the best game he's had since week three.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. On that run where he broke up the middle and just took off, I mean, to see him glide like that, when you see him run and glide, they said he was almost up to 20 miles an hour. And, you know, you wouldn't have told that. You would have said maybe 15, 16. I mean, to be up close to 20, gliding like it was, that tells me that he's a lot more healthier than he's been the entire season. So that was a good run. And then the second one where he cracked over the top of the tackle, I thought that was another nice run too, even though short distance. But, right. Yeah, I think Kamara is definitely going to be back, you know, to where we need him to
be. We need him for the playoffs.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
Now here I'm going to bring up your favorite subject, the officiating.
Oh, my God.
Now, that crew averaged 17 flags per game.
Yeah.
And they didn't disappoint.
No. But I will tell you, look, and we've said this all so many times. Anytime any team gets close to 100 yards in penalties, that's like a touchdown to the other team.
Right.
You know, and the Saints were right up there. You know, I mean, it's just, and when they tell you, well, the Saints had, I forgot the total, Dave, was it like 13 total penalties against the Saints, something like that? But in any case, that was the accepted ones. That wasn't the total. Because they declined a whole bunch of them, you know. So to me, again, this is that whole problem where you're letting the referees being the star of the game. You know, stay the hell out. You know, we need to let the teams play. You know, same thing. I don't know if you caught this or not, but they had an article where they said that the Saints got lucky that they didn't call that play against Gardner Johnson with the hit.
Right.
Dude. He pulled his head to the side. He hit him squarely with his shoulder pad. That is not a penalty.
Well,
you know,
Tomas, here's the thing. The debate has been made that it wasn't hitting a defenseless receiver because it wouldn't have been a fumble. Because the guy caught the ball, took two steps, and then turned upfield to protect himself. But there was no doubt that he hit him in the head with his shoulder. But the problem is he wasn't a defensive
receiver. That's not
receiver.
A penalty.
Now, my argument would be, we've seen him throw the flag for that anyway, so it doesn't matter if it should have been
a penalty. Yeah, but my whole thing is, if they want to throw that as a penalty, they need to rewrite the damn penalty. That's all there is to it. That's not a head-to-head. That's not a spearing. That's not an intentional. That's not, you know, there's none of those things. The man clearly, Gardner Johnson, clearly turned his head to the side, hit him with the end of his shoulder pad. Dude, if it hits you and you, knocks you out, hey, it's a man's game, you know? It's contact sport. So
I don't disagree with what you say about that, but at the end of the day, the rule is. The thing about it is, I don't believe in that situation it was actually a penalty because of the fact that he turned up field and has a chance to defend himself. If you can't hit a running back in the head once he gets the ball and starts running up the field, and I'm using this more an illustration of a running back on a running play, then the game would be over. But in this situation, how many times have we seen the official throw the flag anyway? Just, you know, you hit a guy in the head, knock him out, and hit him with the flag. So,
but I'm just saying to you, that was not a penalty. No different than they threw a flag and then they picked it up when they horse collared Kamara.
Right.
You know, and they say, oh, well, it wasn't really a horse collar because he didn't have him on a nameplate on the back of the shirt. Well, he had his hand inside of his shirt. Well, what would you call that? Right. You know, so, okay.
That surprised me too. Anyway, the debate over the penalty rages on. And to me, I'm not debating whether it was a penalty or not. What I'm debating is the referees usually throw the flag anyway. And if I say that
I'm
lucky, it's not lucky that we had a penalty or didn't have a penalty. It's lucky the ref didn't throw the flag either way.
No, I hear you.
Yeah,
well, you know, I was waiting for it.
Anyway,
I mean, so, you know.
Tomas, I'm going to bring you back when we do the picks. So,
right.
So you hang tight, and I'll talk to you in a bit.
Will do, brother.
BS and Beer Podcast. The worldwide leader in absolutely nothing.
All right, now I'm going to bring in Heath. Heath, I want to talk to you a little bit about the playoff seeding. The best opportunity for us to get help came Thursday night with the Saturday night with the 49ers and Rams, and then Monday night Packers at the Vikings, but neither one of us gave any help. Looks like,
right,
you know, there is an outside chance if a very banged up team in Seattle can beat the 49ers at home. But, man, it just looks like at this point we are going to be relegated to the number three seed.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. It's unfortunate neither one of those other games worked out. Now, going forward from this point, you know, like you said, I think Seattle, you know, the chances of anything can happen. But the chances of the Lions being able to handle the Packers are slim to none. Quite frankly, the chances of Seattle beating San Francisco at this point don't look very good. So the Saints look like they're probably headed for the third seed. But out of the two, we got only hope Seattle is still playing for something. They're going to have a little bit of bloody taste in their mouth from losing to Arizona at home. And, you know, who knows? That's a tough place to play. They're a good team, and they are capable, despite how long the odds look, of being able to handle San Francisco at home next week. So, you know, second seed is not odd. I think first seed is probably would pretty much take a miracle. Second seed, small miracle, but possible.
Statistically, the teams that don't get the first two seeds generally don't make it to the Super Bowl. But I would argue, when do teams generally have so many 13-3 teams in the playoffs? And the last time that happened, none of them made it to the Super Bowl. I think that's the year the Giants won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the most unlikely scenario that was. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. You know, obviously the first and second seed teams and the teams with the first round bye are generally going to, you know, have a better chance to advance. But like that statistic speaks to, how many times is your third seed a 13-3 team that barely lost to one of the other two seeds? You know, so I think it's a little bit different of a situation. Now, of course, with the Saints, you got to bring in the fact that the negative side of that is that when you look at the Saints' home and away playoff records, historically, you know, the Saints need to be at home to win playoff games. They're, what, I think 6-1 at home and 1-5 on the road, or I might have the 5-6 in the wrong place. We'll at least host the first one, obviously. Now, at this point, the question would be, if Seattle loses, I'm not sure. I know Seattle's in the fifth spot right now, and then Minnesota in the sixth. Now, if Minnesota would beat Chicago, I think they play. And if Seattle loses to Frisco, Seattle and Minnesota would wind up with the same record, and I'm not sure which one would wind up being the fifth or which would be the sixth or whatever. But as to who we would host in that first wild card game, you know, the first week.
Well, I tell you what, Heath, you might be surprised to know that while not playoff statistics, the Saints are actually 10-3 on grass in the last three seasons. I think this Saints team might be built. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but they might be built a little bit better than their historical playoff record outside of the Superdome. 97.7 Sports Talk Radio, the BS and Beer Podcast crew. Don't go anywhere. We'll come back and we can do some picks and we have a little bit more to talk about.
You're listening to the BS and Beer Podcast. Now back to your two yats and a coon ass.
Welcome back, 97.7 Sports Talk Radio, the BS and Beer Podcast crew. Tomas Mauricio, Heath Elson-San, Wesley Coleman, all contributing and adding to this outstanding New Orleans Saints coverage. I'm your host, Dave Romero. And listen, we haven't done this enough, but I think it's time here going into the last week of the season to talk a little bit. Well, I guess we do have the playoffs, but we also need to talk a little bit about you leaderboard guys, the guys who have been doing the pick 'em for the entire season. Time to give you some attaboys, some pats on the back, some good job. So let's go ahead and start at 15th. No, I'm kidding. You wouldn't have any idea who number 15 is. But number one, Cajun Billy. Number two, Sheriff Wilmot, Orion, Goblin Shiver, Joe Groove, touchdown there, the OGHB, Oh, God. BS and Beer Tomas at 8th. Then Jazz Picks win. Rounds out. No, one more. Let's say Trofer. What is that? Trofer Leroy rounds out the top 10. Tomas must have had a good week this week and kind of got a little separation. Those are the guys who managed to find their way into the top 10 of the pick 'em. So now it's time to, and we're going to do it in a little bit different way. We're going to go to each individual person, Tomas, Heath, and Wesley, and get their idea on the picks. And obviously we're going to focus on the games in week 17 that matter the most to the Saints. All right, let's bring Wesley back in. Wesley, I was talking earlier about how Alvin Kamara has seemed to have put it together. He looked more explosive. He had some big plays, and he just looked more like the Alvin Kamara we've become accustomed to.
Yeah, I agree totally. And I've kind of been sick of the bad rap that he's been getting this year. There's a few things that kind of stand out to me, and I know he hasn't gotten in the end zone, but rushing over his first three seasons, his first two, 728 rushing yards, 883, and this year he's got 758 with one game remaining. He's right there in the middle of those numbers. Receiving yards, he had 826 receiving yards his first year, 709 last year, and he's at 515 this year. Now, let's remember, he missed a couple of games with injuries, and then when he came back, you could tell he was still injured, but playing injured. So this is a guy that missed two games, has played injured to help the team, but his numbers are really comparable where they were at, except for the actual getting in the end zone and the touchdowns, mm-hmm. which I believe probably the receiving yards is where he's been hurt the most, is with the knee injury and whatever else he was dealing with, kind of caused some problems there. But I think everybody's been giving him a hard time, and people are trying to say because he wasn't in the end zone, like maybe he wasn't trying hard enough, or he has personal issues, or he's not happy in New Orleans. I think that was a whole lot of what didn't need to be there.
Sure.
The guy's playing really well. He's one of the best running backs in football. His numbers prove it with what he's doing, nearly 1,300 all-purpose yards this year. We're still very lucky to have him.
I think he passed the eyeball test this past weekend, and I think that's what people are looking for, is something to make them feel good going to the playoffs. All right, let's get to these pick-ems. We have the Titans at the Texans, and this is a rematch from like 2 weeks ago, and the Texans are +5, so it looks like they're home dogs.
Yeah, I'm going to take the 5 points in the Texans. This is I think that they've still got the explosive offense. They can score some points.
All right, Redskins at the Cowboys. This is a disaster, but the Cowboys – are giving up 10.5 points at home.
How in the world are the Cowboys giving up 10.5 to anybody? I just don't get that at all. Like, anybody. Yeah, the Redskins are going to definitely cover the 10.5. I'm not worried about that.
Eagles at the Giants, another part of that NFC East that's just been a disaster. The Giants are getting at home 4.5 points.
This is actually a game I'm going to watch. This could be an exciting game. Think the Eagles will cover. Think they'll go into the playoffs and eliminate the Cowboys with it.
Okay, big one for us. Seattle is so beat up, but they're 3-point underdogs at home to the 49ers.
So, we're rumoring the return of Marshawn Lynch. I think the 49ers are going to be trying, but I really – the Seahawks, the crowd's going to have to come up. They're going to have to play their best game of the season. And just because I want it to happen, I'm going to take the Seahawks.
Okay. I want it to happen too. The 49ers are a good team, and I've been fighting that all year. And Seattle, quite frankly, I've just not thought this. Wilson's a good player, but I just don't see the Seattle Seahawks being able to play with the 49ers right now, as banged up as they are. They lost their left tackle, their running backs. They lost Gordon last week and a defensive tackle. It's going to be hard. Now, the Saints, the Panthers. The Panthers are getting 13 points at home next week.
Man, I think we might beat them by double that.
Do you think?
Man, I tell you what, no, I'm not saying we've never lost to the Panthers' third-string quarterback before to end the season like we did last year.
Right.
I just don't see it right now. I think that our offense is going to come out there playing guns blazing no matter what else is happening in other games. I think we put this team away and we make an example out of them.
All right, Wesley, thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate it on this kind of makeshift show here during the holidays, and we'll talk to you later.
Who dat?
Bye. All right, let's bring back Tomas for our pick-ems.
All right, sir. And just before we get there, I don't know if everybody heard this or not, but Drew Brees named as a finalist for the NFL 100 all-time team on ESPN.
That's great. That's a good attaboy, especially for the all-time touchdown leader, all-time Absolutely. Passing yard leader. All right, Tomas. Absolutely. Then we got the Redskins, this messed up, I don't know what you want to call it, this mess in the NFC West. Yeah. The Redskins versus the Cowboys.
East, NFC East.
The Cowboys are 10.5-point favorites.
Man, that's a hard game to play, but it's too many points. I'm taking the Redskins in a 10.5.
That's what I'm thinking. First of all, I don't know. Actually, I'm taking this from Wesley, but he said, I don't know how the Cowboys could be 10-point favorites over anybody, and I agree with that. All right. Another part of the whole equation for a playoff spot is you have the Eagles at the Giants, and the Eagles are 4.5-point favorites at the Giants.
I have to tell you, I'm going to take the Giants in this game because I think the Eagles are squeaking by in these games. I know they're trying to play for the championship, you know, for the NFL East, and so I'm going to go with the Giants.
All right. Now, here's one that's going to affect us a lot. This is the big one. You got the 49ers at a very banged-up Seattle. Seattle is 3-point underdogs at home, which is unusual.
Yeah, but they might sign Skittles.
That's
so
right.
I don't know. They have no running back. They've lost every single running back. They have no running backs. You know, they'd have to play, a linebacker at running back or something. I don't know. So, but I'm still thinking they've gotten beat. They've got to be angry. This is the game for them. It's like the Super Bowl for them. So I'm going to take Seattle.
All right. Well, last one, Saints 13-point favorites. You think they're going to cover that, Tomas, at the Panthers?
You know, I love my Saints.
Oh, here we go.
It's hard to pick against them, you know. But, you know, the tight end for the Carolina Panthers pretty much said it all. He said, you know, we suck. So I'm going to take the Saints and give up those 13 points. We're going to cover.
All right. Tomas, thank you, man. We'll talk
Saints
to you next
by 17.
Have a Merry Christmas.
All right, my brother. You too, and to all the fans.
Bye. Okay. Let's see. We also have, again, I've been saying this, that dysfunctional NFC East. First of all, the Redskins at the Cowboys, and unbelievably, he 10.5-point favorites at home over the Redskins. The Cowboys are.
Yeah. Well, the Redskins looked pretty bad this last weekend. Haskins went out of that game hurt. I'm not sure what his status is right now. I think Dallas still. I'm not sure what the situation. I mean, I know obviously they're behind the Eagles, but if they were to win and the Eagles were to lose, I haven't looked further down than that in the playoffs. Anyway, long story short, I think I'm going to actually take Dallas and lay the points in this.
All right. So the Eagles at the Giants. The Giants are 4.5-point underdogs. Another one of those NFC playoff picture implications.
Yeah, I tell you what, this is a scary game for the Eagles because the Giants have shown some life here lately.
Yes.
To go into New York, but, you know, that said, I think they know what's on the line for them. The division is there for their taking. I think the Eagles are going to handle business in New York and cover.
All right. Seattle signs Marshawn Lynch, and they are 3-point underdogs at home. They're banged up. They lost their left tackle. They've lost their running back. They lost defensive tackle, who's a good run stopper, and then they lost Josh Gordon to another. You knew that was coming anyway at some point or another.
But
they're pretty beat up. It is a positive. They did lose to Arizona, forcing their hand. They have to win. Do they have enough in that emotional gas tank to beat? I fought it, but the 49ers are a good team.
Yeah. Yeah, it's time to admit that both the 49ers and the Packers are better than I wanted to give them credit for all season long. But that said, I in my heart, obviously, I hope Seattle can pull it off. I think there's a possibility. But if I'm a betting man, I'm going to have to take Frisco and give up the points in that game.
Yeah, I think so, too. And the last one, listen, the Saints, it's ironic that if the Saints might have to use this as a maybe their bye week, because unless Seattle finds a way to pull it out, the Saints, their seeding doesn't change with a win or a loss. So 13 points, you think the Saints go in there playing to win and win big? Or
that's an interesting scenario because, like you said, they can't be any worse than the third seed even with the loss. So you're thinking, well, will they try to go in and coast and not get people hurt and, you know, maybe even concede that they're just going to be the third seed? But on the flip side, if they win this game, they would get a bye the first, you know, or potentially if they win and get the right thing to happen, they could wind up 2 or even 1, you know, as long of the odds as that may be. But then on the flip side, Carolina is in disarray right now. They fired their coach. They made a quarterback change. They just got stomped at home by a team that the Saints stomped the week before in the Colts.
Right.
So even with all of that, I think the Saints will try to come out be sharp, get a lead, and then they'll probably at some point take their foot off the gas a little bit and try to keep from people getting people hurt. All that said, I still think the Saints could be 13 points better than Carolina. So I'm actually going to take the Saints in later points in this one, as many as they are.
All right, Heath. Hey, man, thank you for everything, and have a Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you in a normal situation when we get the show back in the studio. Well, that's all the show we have for you. So for Heath Elsenson, Tomas Mauricio, Wesley Coleman, I'm Dave Romero. I'm your host. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast on 97.7 Sports Talk Radio.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back, and that's the way it is.
Oh, boy, don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, go give your time to Davey, Heat, and Tomas. We do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. Oh, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast.